Turn in your Bibles with me tonight, please, to the book of Ecclesiastes once more. Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 9. Ecclesiastes 11, verse 9. We're going to continue our study in that book tonight. This will be next to the last lesson in this book, and when I return from Africa, we'll conclude the book, and then we'll get started in something else on Sunday evenings. But this has been a profitable study for me, and I hope that it has been for you. You know, life can appear, just from a casual observance of life under the sun, it can appear to be disappointing, unfair, oppressive, tragic, and seemingly without point or meaning. And Solomon is looking at the world from that perspective, at least to a degree, and he's pointing out that although it may appear that way, there is really purpose in life. And as we get to these last couple of chapters of this book, we see the purpose of life. He's already mentioned it a couple of times in the book, but in these last couple of chapters, he's really emphasizing that which really matters, and that is to fear God, to keep His commandments. For this is the whole of man. Everything else is actually worthless. That's how the book began, Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and verse 1. And he's continually made that point, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. In fact, he's going to make that statement a couple of times in our study tonight. So, Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 9. I want to again thank you for being here and appreciate your prayers as I get ready to depart this Tuesday. Lord willing, Wednesday morning I'll be waking up in London, England. And then on Thursday morning I'll be waking up in Nairobi, Kenya. Lord willing, all will go well and we'll be back on the 19th of July. And so pray for our efforts as we go and work for the brethren and with the brethren there, and that our efforts are bountiful. So, all right. Also, I want to apologize to Grant. Grant, I'm sorry. My clicker wouldn't work, so I hit my phone and it jumped ahead two slides on you. I'm sorry about that. It took me a minute to get back. Appreciate you, though. All right. The last two chapters emphasizing, of course, our responsibilities and duties to God. God will hold us accountable for our duties, for our life, and the things that we do in it. Let us keep that in mind. Let's begin reading in verse 9 of chapter 11. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart, and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come and the years draw near, when you say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men bow down, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those who look through the windows grow dim, when the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low, when one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of music are brought low, also they are afraid of height and of terrors in the way. When the almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper is a burden, and desire fails. For man goes to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. Remember your Creator. Before the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. So in this section, it begins by emphasizing to the young. Solomon is turning his attention to the young. And as I look out tonight, we have most of our young people gone. We have some young people here. By the way, let me say something about this, rejoice, O young man. He's not just talking about somebody in his preteens, or even someone in their teens, or even just those in their 20s, or even their 30s. But those who are young and still vital and with strength and able to serve and to work. Okay, that would go all the way up to the 40s and 50s nowadays. You know, I hear that the 50s are the new 30s, right? And the 60s are the new 40s. And so we're able to live a little longer and be active a little longer. Hopefully that trend continues, right? But he's not just talking to those who are mere youths. Those who have strength and are able to serve, who are able to work. So rejoice, O young man. Listen, the first thing that Solomon says is rejoice. Now, you may think that is automatic. I mean, most young people are happy, right? The younger they are, the happier they are. And for the most part, that's been our experience. The younger people, young people are happy. And listen, the innocence of the young. We should take that very seriously. Keeping our children innocent. Because in this wicked world, that innocence can be destroyed. It can be robbed of them very quickly. Innocence is valuable. But part of our, children being happy is associated with that innocence. In our culture today, innocence is stolen from them far too soon. Wouldn't you agree with that? With all the things that they see in their homes, with the things that they see at school, with the things that they see on television, their innocence can be destroyed so early. And that's a shame. Because that's one of the things that provides children with this joy that Solomon is talking about. But, as you get older, young people ought to be happy. They ought to be joyful. But that is not an automatic thing in this world. We live in a day and time of broken homes, godlessness, godless influences. Materialism is emphasized. And if children are not nurtured in the admonition of the Lord and they are brought up in the Lord, then it's easy to become materialistic in our thinking. And I'll say to you, my friend, that when we become materialistic, there's no doubt our materialistic ideals are going to be destroyed. They're going to be dashed before us because it all is very temporary. But with the godlessness that does exist, we should not be surprised that depression and sadness and heartache is all too common among our young people. Depression and suicide rates have skyrocketed over the last few years. In fact, I was looking at a paper today. Actually, it was from last year, May 11th of 2018. Depression striking more young people than ever is the title of the article by Robert Pritt. And it's in the Health Day Reporter. Americans are fast becoming a very depressed lot. New research shows there has been a sharp spike in cases of major depression in the United States in recent years, especially among teens and millennials. The Blue Cross Blue Shield Association analysis of medical claims data showed that the overall rate of major depression was 4.4% and that the diagnosis rates rose 33% between 2013 and 2016. Those rates increased 63% among teens and 47% among millennials. Major depression diagnoses are growing quickly, especially for adolescents and millennials, said Trent Haywood, Senior Vice President and Chief Medical Officer for Blue Cross and Blue Shield. That's not a surprise to me. Is that surprising to you? Solomon's charge here, though, is to the young man. You know what? Here's the thing that I think very important for us to understand and remember. The way that we view life is decided by us. Our circumstances do not dictate how we view our life. We choose that. Solomon's charge here is in the form of a command. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Even while young believers should set their hearts to enjoy the blessings of God, and the happiest period of one's life should be his youth, but sadly, too often, that's not the case. Young people are brought up in broken homes. They see parents, moms and dads, refusing to follow God, and in fact have nothing to do with God, and it's a materialistic world that they're brought up in. And they're left without hope or real sustenance except from a materialistic perspective. Joy and cheerfulness does not, however, depend upon these circumstances. Joy and cheerfulness depends upon our perspective or our attitude towards things. And we choose that attitude. Now, I'm not saying, nor am I equating joyfulness, rejoicing, and cheerfulness necessarily with happiness, because we can be sad and we can see and be realist, you know, and see the things, the problems that exist. And the circumstances can, you know, be a hindrance to us. But we still choose our path. We still choose how we view things in life. And no question that our home life, what we've been taught, affects how we perceive this life. And our home life has something to do with that and our attitude. It helps form our attitude. But our belief system is really going to make the biggest difference in our perception. What do we believe? Of course, if a child has not been taught the things of God, he's going to be at a disadvantage when it comes to the things of this life and how to view them properly. But if one has faith, and if that faith is instilled in them, they choose to pursue that faith, then they are choosing a path that will help them to accomplish something that few people these days have, and that's true joy and peace in their life. How would a believer, for example, differ from an agnostic? You take a teenager who is an agnostic. They don't believe in God. How happy do you think they're going to be? Whereas you have a young teenager who has a strong faith and confidence in God, and he lives his life with that perspective on life, he has a much better opportunity, if you will, to take the life he's given by the horns and see it the way that it ought to be, and be successful. Whereas an agnostic, an unbeliever, would not. Solomon says, walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. Now, Solomon here is saying to enjoy life. He said this several times previously, chapter 2, 24, chapter 3, 13, chapter 8, 15, chapter 9 and verse 7. Enjoy life, right? Take advantage of the fruit of your labor. Enjoy what God has blessed you with. Now, that is the underlying perception that is being granted here by Solomon. He's not saying, go out and just sow your wild oats. That's not his point, because what does he say after this? He says, but know that for all these things God will bring you into judgment. And he also says, turn away from evil. Okay? So that's not what he's saying. He's saying enjoy the blessings that God has given you. Enjoy your time. Here's something. Young people especially really do need to get this. Okay? They're so rushed to get through school. So hurried to get grown up. You know? They just can't wait to get out from under their parents' thumb. Right? Just can't wait. Then what do they find out? They find out that work is harder than going to school. They find out that real life is much more difficult than staying at home, you know, with their parents and going to school and, you know, doing all that kid stuff. Much better, much easier. They find that out. So Solomon's really saying, enjoy your lot, enjoy your place, enjoy where you are, enjoy school while you're there. Enjoy the things that God has blessed you with. Follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. But remember, God will judge you. Nothing here is encouraging young men or women to engage in sinful or irresponsible activities. In fact, such activities deprive one of their real joy in life. You know, sin destroys a person. And you can do things as a young person that will follow you the rest of your life. How many people have destroyed themselves by being foolish in their youth? I will also say this, that, you know, when Solomon's talking about walking in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes, yes, enjoy life. Please listen, though, to those who are wiser than you, those who are older than you. Please listen. One of the things that is so frustrating, it hurts, it breaks your heart, to see the path that a young person is on, and you know where that path is going to take them, and you try to counsel them, you try to encourage them to do what's right, you try to get them off of that path, but they simply will not listen. That's sad. And that's hurtful. And of course, it's more hurtful for them. Please listen to those who counsel you in the ways of God. And listen carefully to those who have been down that road before. That's why there's so much in the Bible about respecting those who are older. Respecting those who are in positions of authority. They're supposed to be older. They're supposed to be wiser. And if God governs our desires and our goals, and by the way, again, this is underlying Solomon's instruction here to walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes. He's anticipating that this young person is going first and foremost to be recognizing God as his creator. Okay, in this context, he is expecting this young person to be first and foremost committed to God. So God is governing his thoughts. God is governing his actions. God is governing his goals. So if God is governing our heart and God is governing our goals, then those desires of our heart and the goals that we have set for us are going to be in line and in harmony with God's will to begin with. So you pursue those. That's fine. But just remember again, for all these, God will bring you into judgment. Remember that. Remember that. Then he says, from a negative perspective in verse 10, therefore remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. So remove sorrow. Okay, so rejoice. Be cheerful. Remove sorrow. That's something that you can do. You can take sorrow out of your heart. Did you know that? You can take these bad attitudes, these negative thoughts out of your heart. And you can throw them away. And that's exactly what Solomon says to do with them. Remove sorrow from your heart. And put away evil from your flesh. Now, these feelings are to be put away from the mind. And this is a deliberate act of the will. We force ourselves to think a certain way. And it's good to begin at an early age to think right. To think right. We are what we think. And what we think makes us into who we are. So our thinking must be right. Remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh. Watch what you do. Moral evil is what he has in mind here. In your enjoyment of life, don't defile your body. Don't do those things that are sinful against God. Do not do that which arouses God's anger. Do what's right. Follow God's will. Know that God is going to hold you accountable. Put away sorrow, those things that cause pain and sorrow, put them away. And put away the sins that are so tempting, especially to those who are young. Foolishness in youth can follow you, my friend, for the rest of your life. We all make mistakes. We all fail at some point to listen to somebody else. And some of the sorrow, no doubt, that he's talking about here is the sorrow of guilt, of messing up, you know, doing the wrong thing, the guilt that comes with that. But we need to always go back to the right path and have enough wisdom to get back right with God and do those things that are pleasing in His sight. For childhood and youth are vanity. The word vanity here really means that which is fleeting. And again, it's associated with, you know, it means a waste, nothing, it's worthless. But here, when he talks about youth and childhood being vanity, it's temporary. So enjoy it while you're there, okay? Don't borrow trouble from tomorrow when times will be harder. Life does get tougher, I assure you. So, youth soon passes away. The capacity to enjoy life actually will also fade away as time goes by. So one should use these years correctly, wisely, remembering they're short. Take advantage of them. Take advantage of your youth. You know what? I think that goes right along with what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 5 when he talks about redeeming the time for the days are evil. Take advantage of the moments that you have. Young people, there's not a better time in your life to take advantage of the time that's given you than when you're young, because you are laying a foundation for the rest of your life that you're going to be building on. Take the time to lay it wisely in accordance with God's will. Begin early in your life with a committed life to God. A life that is devoted to His service. Remember now your Creator. Notice in chapter 12 and verse 1, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. So he says, rejoice, remove, and now in chapter 12 and verse 1, remember now your Creator. God has the moral right to expect your compliance, your obedience to His will. You know why? He is your Creator. He made you. He made all of us. As Creator, God also knows what is best for us. You see, God made us and He knows what is good for us. C.S. Lewis put it this way. You know, if you took a car, you went out and you bought a brand new car. Of course, the cars that were brand new in his day are a lot different than the cars that are new in our day, but the story works just as well. You go down here and get you a new car, all right? And you drive it down to the gas station, and instead of putting gas in it, you pull up to the water hose and you put water in that gas tank, and you try to run water through your car's engine, see what happens to it. Won't work right, will it? It'll mess it up. It'll ruin it. It'll ruin the carburetor. And it'll never run right again. C.S. Lewis says that's exactly what sin does to the human being, to the person. Sin is like water in your gas tank. We are not made to run on sin. We are made to run on God's will, because God's will is what's best for us. He created us to do the things that He would have us to do, because these are the things that are good for us, that are best for us. You know, wicked people, unlearned people, ignorant people of God's way, and rebels against God's authority, they see God's commandments and God's ways as being restrictive and burdensome and hard. But you know, if we have the right attitude and a godly attitude, we recognize something. It's very important that God's way is actually the best way to live. God's ways are the best ways. God's way is the right way God's way is good for us. Do you want to know how to get joy and cheerfulness in your life? Do what God says. And that's going to produce a happy life. Right? So as God is, you know, has the moral ability and the right to expect obedience, He also, as our Creator, knows what's best for us. And as 1 John chapter 5, verses 1 through 4 says, you know, His commandments are not grievous. His commandments are not burdensome. They're actually good for us. Therefore, I should submit to His will cheerfully and have the confidence in knowing that God knows what's best, that God's path that He's laid out is the best path for me to follow. As the psalmist says in Psalm chapter 1, verses 1 through 3, you know, those who love God's will and serve God, they're like that tree planted by the waters. They are nourished and they grow strong. That's what living on God's will do for you. Youth is often known for demanding their rights, you know, resisting and questioning authority, including God's authority. The worldliness that's all around us is a great temptation to the young. If we're not taught correctly, then this world can certainly lead us astray very easily. And even those who have been taught correctly, this world is a great hindrance. Young people pursue things, possessions, power, earthly knowledge. They have a quest for fun and excitement. And these things can take you away from God. It's important to keep our head on straight. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. These are the times not to sow your wild oats, but to keep your head on straight, allow God to govern your life, and you will be thankful that you did. I promise. Young people need to remember that all they are and all they have is due to what God has given them. That God is God. And the days of strength and the days of vigor are the days in which we need to be accomplishing the most that we can for God. Because, you know, the time for service, the time for spreading the gospel, the time to do good is while we can. The day is coming when we can't. So, the ideal time to commit ourselves to God is when we're young. You build your best life then when you're young, a life that is in service to God. Youth is when self-surrender is easiest, by the way. Because if you don't do it when you're young, your heart can easily become hardened. And you may never turn back to God. Will we squander the days of our strength? The time of our strength is short. And that's the point that Solomon is making. Now, in verses 1b down in verse 2, we have a general description of old age. Before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. While the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain. So, in other words, while you still can, you need to be serving God. Because he points to a time in which life is going to become much more inconvenient. Grievances, afflictions are going to be common. Your aches and your pains are going to get more, right? Life itself is going to become more burdensome. Just getting out of bed in the morning is harder. You know, here's something that's even sadder. Going to bed is even harder. You know, going to bed, getting everything is more difficult. Older people find it more difficult to find pleasure in their life. So, while you have this time, use it wisely. When he says, no pleasure in them, I have no pleasure in them, especially if one's chosen in his youth not to serve God, Just think of all the time that's wasted. Just think of all the regrets that person now has. Now, maybe, you know, people do get older and they do change their attitudes, they do change their minds, and they realize, you know what, I'm going downhill fast. I better turn my attention to God. You know, it is true, better late than never, right? That's true. And certainly we would love for everyone to turn their attention to God regardless of their time in life. And it is also true that they can be saved if they will repent and they'll turn to God. God will save them. But I will say to you that living with guilt is not the way to live out your last years. Wouldn't it be so much better if you didn't have the guilt of wasted time? Years of wasted time. One cannot be a miserable and selfish child, a miserable and selfish teenager, or a 20-year-old, or a 30-year-old, or a 40-year-old, you know, and then expect to enjoy the final days of his life happy. Now that's an important point to remember. Solomon goes on, the metaphors that are used are to describe the deterioration of the body and the old age that comes on all of us if we are blessed to live that long. Our productiveness will end. In fact, our productiveness, the way that our health system is today, our productive years may end quite a few years before our life actually ends. We may get to that point where we're not much good to the service of God. There are a lot of things we can't do that we used to could do. And that goes on for a number of years because of our health is so much better these days. People are living a lot longer. But the quality of life is also deteriorating, and they live with that lesser quality of life for many more years. How long do you really have to serve God effectively? I don't know that. My dad, I was talking to him the other night. He's 86 years old, still gets up 4 days a week, at least 3 days a week, but mostly 4 days a week, and goes to work. Drives to work, works all day, drives back home, works in the yard, then goes to bed at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. But he's still very active. Many people are not nearly that active when they're 86 years old. Like Brother Rumker, I mean, he was mowing the yard here at the church building up until he was almost 90. So, you know, some people are very active. But many others are not so blessed. You know, we lose our effectiveness much earlier because of health, the failure of our health. We don't know how long we will be productive, so take advantage. Whole point, take advantage of today, right? The picture is of darkened days now that Solomon paints, and these are simply the realities of life. The sun, the light, the moon, the stars are not darkened. In other words, while you have light, work. But you have the passing of light, the loss of effectiveness, the loss of vitality. And then you have the clouds that do not return after the rain. And the metaphor here is that one storm it comes after another. And that's what happens. The older that you get, it seems like there's one thing after another thing after another thing after another. You get this problem kind of under control and then something else will hit you. It's just one thing after another, right? And so, before the moon, the sun, and the stars are darkened, and before, you know, the clouds, you know, just keep rolling in one after the other, storms of life comes one after the other, serve God. Then he turns his attention in verses 3 and 4 to some other metaphors. Notice, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men bow down, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the window grow dim, when the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low, when one rises up at the sound of a bird and all the daughters of music are brought low. Also, they are afraid of height and the terrors of the way. When the almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper is a burden, and the desire fails, for man goes to his eternal home. So you've got this time of old age, the keepers of the house shall tremble. The arms and the legs become frail and begin to tremble and shake. Men of power shall bow themselves, metaphor for their legs, become feeble and bent. The grinders cease because they are few. Your teeth fall out of your head. Thankful for dentists. You know, we've got it a lot better than they did back then. But still, you've got problems. And those that look out of the windows be darkened. Your eyes are impaired with age. You see things going up and down the street. What was that? And also the doors shall be shut in the streets, the loss of hearing, the loss of participation with those events that are outside. You get to where you don't even want to go outside. You have no interest in that. The old man rises to the bird's voice. Usually this is taken as a reference to light sleep of the old man. You know, anything will startle him. Anything will keep him awake. Some have suggested, though, it has to do with one's voice becoming weakened. But it seems to me like it's just, you know, sleep is hard. And the daughters of music shall be brought low. The cheerful evidences. Kitner says on page 103 of his commentary, these cheerful evidences of a living world about us grow remote and faint. One feels no longer fully a part of it. And so, you know, the things that you would normally have enjoyed earlier in life no longer bring you joy. It's a burden to you to get out and participate in things. It's hard. Life itself is hard. And you don't feel like a part of it. Also, they are afraid of height and of terrors in the way. The aged are often afraid of falling. My dad, just a couple of years ago, got his extension ladder out, was up on the roof doing some work on the roof. He got in all kinds of trouble for that. He didn't fall, but he could have. And you know, as you get older, you don't have any business up on a ladder. You don't have any business up on your roof. You don't. You know what? It even gets to the point where just walking around is dangerous, right? You fear just a falling. My brother Rumper fell and cracked his pelvis. He's lucky that he didn't break it. And that's a real threat, a real danger. You got to be careful. And so you're afraid of just getting out. And the terror's in the way. Just, you know, you feel unsafe. You feel incapable of taking care of yourself, protecting yourself. When the almond tree blossoms, your hair turns white. Not just gray, but now it's turned white. The grasshopper is a burden. The picture is, according to Bible Knowledge Commentary, the body being bent and one's walking being slowed. The locust, when they first come out of their cocoon, is very sluggish in their movement. And I don't know if that's the point or not, but it fits. I think the idea is that, you know, anything becomes hard. And desire fails. All desires, physical, mental. As you get older, things die down. You don't have the same desires. Well, number one, you recognize the things that are not important anymore. But then you also simply have loss of appetite, loss of food, loss of all kinds of desires, natural desires that you once had. Even aged Christians can feel that they are isolated from the world because of their age. And so the time to serve God is when you're young. Serve Him, be faithful, create relationships that will last into your older years. You'll have people there to take care of you and help you. You know, the time to serve God is now. If you live a miserly, selfish life, what's going to happen when you get older? For man goes to his eternal home and the mourners go about in the streets. Death is coming for all of us. Serve God now while you can. The silver cord, the golden bowl. You know, the silver, the pitcher is a cord that's holding up a bowl of oil that for the lamp. And if the cord is cut, the bowl and all falls and shatters. There is no more light. The pitcher by the well is easily broken. The clay pitcher. You accidentally bump it on the side of the well, the stone on the well, and it shatters. The pitcher is no more of any use. Man's life is not only precious, it's fragile. And then you have the broken wheel there at the cistern to draw up the water. If the wheel is broken, you can't draw up the water. You can't. The source of life is even cut off. So that's when it all comes to its end. The dust will return to the earth as it was. When God made man, He made him from the dust of the ground. When man sinned, God's pronouncement was, to the dust you shall return. You will die. But when we die, the body goes back to the earth, but the spirit returns to God who gave it, to be judged by God, to give an account to God for how we've lived our life, how we have spent our time. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher. All is vanity. You know, our time, our lives, are moments of investments. We're paying it forward, or we're robbing ourselves. One of the two. We're either living for God, or we are destroying ourselves. One of the two. While you are young, the encouragement, the exhortation, the command is, serve God while you are young. You set forth yourself on a path that will end in everlasting life. You are preparing a foundation upon which your life will be based, and it will be secure even in the time of old age and death. You've got God. So the important thing is, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Remember now. We need to work and strive to increase our spiritual knowledge and growth, and to continue to grow in knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ and in our service to Him. One of the ways that we grow is to live it. To live for God. Do it while you're young. Don't wait till after you've sown your wild oats, because then all you have is a mess that you're going to have to live with for the rest of your life. Wise counsel here from Solomon in this section of Scripture. Will we listen to it? Will we accept God's will and God's instruction for our betterment, for our good, and of course, most importantly, for our eternal well-being? Maybe you're here tonight and you need to render obedience to the gospel of Christ. Take advantage of the time that you have tonight. Be baptized in the name of Christ for the remission of your sins. And be raised to walk in newness of life and serve the Lord. Be faithful to Him. If there's something in your life that you need to correct, repent of it. Turn back to God. If you need our help, you need our encouragement, you need our prayers, let us know. All together we stand and while we sing.